Welcome to Minority Corner.
With an Eke.
And James. Learn, laugh, play.
It's like Blue's Clues.
Only more black, gay.
And ladylike, oh my god. Ladies.
Did you forget your line?
I'm here, I promise. I'm here.
And ladylike.
I said it.
Great start.
My wine.
Previously on Minority Corner.
What did we talk about?
Ooh, Eneke, I was trapped in a closet and I was hella high.
You're still trapped in a closet. You are in there.
That's true. I'm still so excited, just like Jesse Spano, and hanging out in the fucking closet. That's too much. What?
That would be so dark of a Saved by the Bell episode if she was just like in the closet and high on speed and like failing her classes.
It was on the cutting room Jessie. Floor. It's on the extras. And you talked about Kesha last week.
I did. I talked about Kesha and the music industry and how it's fucked up.
Yeah.
And what did you talk about again?
Do you not remember? Were you not there?
I do remember, but I just thought that you would want to talk about it.
Again? Well, in case you forgot, like Eneke did, I talked about the LGBT youth who are gay and homeless, and the growing epidemic that is.
Yeah. See, I didn't want to, you know, say something cutesy because it's a serious topic.
It is. It's a mouthful. And we gave praise to Bette Midler and
we
decided
did.
To start our first fundraising campaign for Lauryn Hill.
Who needs a watch.
And this week, what are you talking about, Eneke?
I'm going to talk about how to educate your children about racism.
Ooh, nice. And
yeah.
I'm going to talk about something not so fun. I'm talking about rape in the military.
Ooh,
yes.
Not so nice.
Not so
but
nice.
Interesting.
Yep, and specifically talking about you will never guess which gender is the one that is statistically raped the most.
I believe the fifth.
All right, well, we'll find out later in the episode. You weren't.
Yes, we
just
will.
To let you know, you weren't on trial just now, but you can plead the fifth.
I'm always on trial.
The trial of Eneke starts today.
Dun, dun, dun. James.
A 5, 6, 7, 8 podcast.
Oh, we're dancing. Oh, choreography.
Podcast. Didn't you come to rehearsals, Eneke?
I know. Was it just you at rehearsal? How did you not know that I wasn't at rehearsal? It's just you and me.
Eneke, I don't have time. I can't, you know, lead you to rehearsals. I can't teach you the choreography, the combinations. Eneke.
I know, and then
we're going to...
But you got to let me know these things.
Well, Eneke, I've already told you.
You gotta let me know about the book club. You gotta let me know about rehearsals, dance rehearsals.
Yes, absolutely. Eneke, I need you to wake up and pay attention in the words of Sister Mary Clarence.
Oh my god.
I think every episode we should see how many times we can mention Sister Act.
I like that. We can just drop in little Easter eggs. In fact, I probably should rewatch it just so I can get some extra little tidbits to drop in.
Good call. And for those of you who are just tuning in, Eneke and I go way back all the way to college, which was what, like 2 years ago?
100 years ago.
Okay, those are two very different numbers. We went to college together somewhere between the time of 2 years ago and 100. You can choose.
Pick one.
And in college, I used to yell at you too during choreography rehearsals.
You
Eneke
did.
And I would do dance routines. I was like, no, Eneke. It's like this. Boo-da-boo-cha.
I think at one point,
6, 7, 8.
We were rehearsing some dance, and you're like, don't do it how Eneke's doing it.
We were on a time crunch, Eneke. We were on, you know, the timetables that we had to work with, and I needed to just...
I am not a dancer.
I needed to get the crew together. But I put you in the center and in the front, so I need you to step it up.
Because I'm beautiful.
You are. You are beautiful. I can't help but not.
So what's been going on in your life? Tell me about the world, about life with James in New York.
So if Eneke sounds like she's a little bit sauced, it's because she is. She had a very
I'm
rough
tired.
Day, and she's drinking wine out of a mason jar.
Because I live in the Bay Area, and when you live here, you get a mason jar.
full of wine.
It's sent to you in the mail.
Every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh, weren't you missing a little Bay Area recently with your kombucha?
Oh my God, yes. Oh God, I was livid. I was livid. So I'm trying to get some probiotics in my system because that's what you do when you're from the West Coast. You drink a little kombucha if you're not feeling good.
Yeah.
And you can't throw a stick in California without bumping into kombucha. It's everywhere.
Oh,
it's,
there's always,
it,
oh yeah.
It's in the fire hydrant.
There's always somebody trying to pedal there.
There's a baby drinking it.
There's a well of it outside of my work. You just ladle it into your mason jar.
Exactly. It's everywhere. Like, my clothes are, like, drenched in it. And I was like, okay, let me just run to the CVS to get some kombucha. Not there. And I'm like, okay, that's okay. And then I went to...
Wait.
Yes.
For people who don't know, it's a fermented drink that is slightly carbonated, and it helps your gut.
Yeah, it's filled with probiotics, which are these, like, organisms in your... That, like... You're putting things in your stomach. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, okay? I don't know how this magic Harry Potter sorceress juice drink works. But I drink it, and I feel better.
I like how you jump from scientist immediately to wizard.
Because if science can't explain it, it must be magic.
I love that.
But
it's good.
So I went to go find it. I went to like three different stores and couldn't find it. And then I asked this one lady who works at 24 Hour Fitness, because I'm still kind of there in my last week of 24 Hour Fitness, wearing my sexy Planet Fitness shirt that I cut the sleeves off of.
You cut the sleeves off?
Yeah, Aneke, I gotta, you know, people want to know which way to the gun show.
Oh my God. I wear mine as a little jammy nightshirt.
Sure, I'm sure it's cuddly and cozy.
It's like the opposite of sexy. Mine's all big and like my boobs are all saggy in it. Meanwhile, you're like muscles popping out the side.
Yes. Well, anyways, long story long.
Yeah.
There's no one knows what kombucha is. And there was this one woman who was like, I guess you can find it. She like drew me a map and I was like, fuck this mess.
Did you have to go to like some dealer?
Yeah, she's like, I know a guy. It was underneath. It was like, his name is Tommy.
What?
He lives underneath one of the bridges.
Oh my God.
But you don't know which bridge. You have to like, he moves around. So,
oh, so you got to follow him on Twitter.
After this episode, I'm heading right over there to see where he
to the Washington Bridge.
Yeah. Other than that, I'm great. I'm setting sail, or how do you say taking a flight?
Taking flight.
Okay. I'm doing that. Leaving tomorrow. I'm going to go see Jerome in Amsterdam.
Ooh,
tomorrow.
Reunited and it feels so good.
It's been 6 weeks.
Are you excited?
I'm beside myself. I can't wait to get the fuck out of this country again and go see my bae.
God.
I'm out of here. Fuck you
so
all.
So aggressive.
I'm out. Let's just drop
the
mic.
Are you ever going to come back?
I don't know.
Didn't you move today too?
Oh yeah, and I moved to Harlem as well today. But I'm out of Brooklyn and I'm moving on up to the West Side.
Get it.
And the traffic was terrible. Don't drive in New York.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Bill Clinton has his office in Harlem.
Mm. Good for him.
That what? Wasn't any shade at all.
No, it
that
wasn't.
Was the most non-shady comment I've ever.
I just think about poor Monica. Can we talk about Monica Lewinsky? Because we didn't have our podcast then, and I think we need to backtrack.
Back when we were little kids.
Yes, we didn't have it yet.
And it was only dial up.
You know what? I want to put someone in the corner, and her name is Linda Tripp. Linda Tripp, fuck you.
Worst friend.
Who does that?
Worst.
Who records their friend's phone conversations?
Oh my God, James.
Like, who are
James,
you?
James, I'm going to throw an oldie but a goodie to you and the listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, our lost perfect guy episode.
Yeah.
Remember Karen?
Yes.
Linda Tripp is a Karen.
You're right. So, yes, if you don't know what we're talking about, go back and watch the perfect guy last episode, episode 17, I think.
Yeah.
And that's Linda Tripp is a Karen. And we all know that we don't want a friend like Karen from the perfect
guy. Get Karen out of here.
Not Karen, my friend who I know is listening, but...
No, Karen is the best. Karen from UCSC is lovely.
Yeah. Anyways, Linda Tripp, we're putting you out on blast. We don't like you. And we're putting you in the corner. And I don't even want you to come onto the show because I don't trust you, because I think you would record. Even though we're already recording, you'd also record.
I know. It would be a lot of feedback.
Too much recording. So Linda Tripp, you're out of here. Moving on from Linda Tripp.
That was the most random beef that you just started ever. James has some beef with Linda Tripp. Watch out, world. Twitter's about to blow up. Hashtag Tripp beef.
Something I wanted to touch base on really quickly before we get into our corners was something I saw in the news that touched a little close to home. I don't know if you saw this in the news, but it was about Don Williams used to run Rainbow Theater at the University of California, Santa Cruz. And how would you describe Rainbow Theater, Aneke?
A theater troupe that I wish that I was a part of, but I never was.
Right, yes. We were almost
but,
in.
But I'll
we
describe it. Okay.
In Rainbow Theater. You almost were in. But we did Iran Man together instead.
I was a Care Bear cousin to the Rainbow Theater. I was friends with a lot of people who were involved in it. So basically, it was like the multicultural theater troupe of UC Santa Cruz, which had very little POCs.
Right.
BT-dubs.
And so, like, he created a home and a space, and it's still running. I think they've been running for, like, 20-plus years, I want it. Something crazy.
Hell
I don't
yeah.
know the numbers. But he created a space and a home for, you know, people of color who traditionally were not getting casted in main stage shows.
Right.
He has a son called Donald Williams Jr., and his son went to San Jose State and was the victim of several pranks that were happening.
That was his son?
That was his son, yes.
I didn't know that was his son.
Yes. So
holy shit.
To catch the rest of y'all up, what happened was the series of pranks that were happening, Don Williams Jr., he was in his dorm and his roommates, his first day, his white roommates had placed a U-shaped bike lock around his neck. And he couldn't get it off until they gave him the key. And they tried to do that several times. They would hang the Confederate flag up in their apartment and just leave it hanging there. They'd write, like, derogatory, like, they'd use write the N-word up on their whiteboard. They used to call him three-fifths. So as in, like, three-fifths a person, right? Like,
I mean, when this story came out, I was so disgusted because, one, I am an alumni from San Jose State. I got my master's degree from San Jose
right.
State. And I always kind of took pride in that. And then also, San Jose State has a beautiful tribute to the Black Power Salute by I'm forgetting their names right now, but the gold and silver medalists for the 1960s Olympic track.
Right.
Competition. Remember that where they held their fist up with the leather gloves on it?
Oh, yeah. We talked about that. Yeah.
They have a giant statue for that.
Oh, shit. Wow.
So the fact that this went down on the campus was like horrible.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Right. And well, Don Williams. So I guess they had also, like, they had put up the Confederate flag and they were doing all this, like, ridiculous shit and making him feel obviously uncomfortable. And he had, like, talked to them about it. And they wrote him this letter. Mm-hmm. And they said, his roommate said, "It has come to our attention that you have taken offense to some of our actions over the past few months. It's not our intention to beget hostilities between the members of our humble abode, but rather welcome all with a sense of congenial pride."
Oh, Lord.
They went on, "We extend our sincerest apologies if our previous conduct did not make you feel welcome as a member of our communal domicile."
Oh,
the
my
beloved
God.
Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, "We must learn to live together as brothers or perish as fools."
How dare they quote Martin Luther King?
Yeah. Oh, and then they went on and they said, "As you may have noticed, many of us in this suite have formed a paternal brotherhood."
Ew.
"And we'd like to cordially invite you to join us as Faith or Finn or Fiend." Yeah.
What?
So they blamed him for not being in on the racist joke, essentially.
These guys sound like dicks.
And not even the racist joke. I'm sorry. The harassment. And where this case has left off, the boys were expelled.
Okay.
But, so San Jose State, you did your thing there. But the government of San Jose or California, you fucked this up.
State. Yeah.
Because, yeah, the state.
City government.
Yeah. Something fucked this shit up because they're not being charged. This isn't being charged as a hate crime. They're being let go with a misdemeanor.
It's not being charged as a hate crime. It sounds pretty hateful to me.
Yeah, well, then the jury, I guess, it was six men and six women and, you know, jury of your peers. None of them were Black.
What? San Jose is pretty diverse, too, so they had to try hard for that.
To not find a single Black person to be.
But what about other
this
people of color? Did they have any Latinos or Asian people in the jury? Did you know?
I don't know. I hope not. I hope it was all white jury, because if there are any POCs on there that could not sway this to this is obviously a hate crime. This was harassment. Mm-hmm. And I also want to put a pause to, like, I think millennials and younger kids get a pass a lot of times because people are like, oh, they don't really understand racism and they don't really.
Oh, you understand.
Oh,
I mean, yeah, come on.
Everything they did was completely deliberate and came from an understanding of they knew the things that they could say and do that would be directly. They knew what they were doing. 3/5, right? You know, quoting Dr. King, Confederate flag. Right? That's not just like, oh, we wanted to have a black ghetto party, quote unquote, which that's problematic. Absolutely. But I can maybe see where that one maybe gets an ignorant slide. Don't fucking do it again. But I can maybe see that. But this?
You're the nice parent. I would have been mad about that.
Oh, I'm upset too. But this, like, this, I would be upset about that one too. Like, fuck that shit. But this is, like, so incredibly deliberate.
This one, they did their research.
Yeah.
Like, 3/5, that's fucked up.
It's too much.
That's so fucked up.
I just wanted to touch base on this because it hit so close to home because both of us know Don Williams Sr. You went to San Jose State. Like, this is so close to us. So I wanted to put that out there.
Oy, oy, oy. What's wrong with people? I just get so upset because it's like, yeah, racism, horribleness, but just to do it to an individual person and make their life a living hell makes no sense at all to me. It's disgusting.
None at all.
Mm-hmm. It's disgusting. Nope.
Okay, well, I've got a little topic. Do you want to come with me to my corner?
Do you have snacks?
No, but there's a banana peel.
I'm hungry, though.
I have a banana peel. Can you eat that? Drink your wine. Just drink your wine, Aneke.
It's empty.
Have another drink. Ugh, we'll take a break. Let's go take a break. Aneke's going to get a refill, and I'll see you all over at my corner. And I can hear in my corner, and I wish I had good news, but I don't. So hold on to your...
Oh, just lay it on thick.
Hold on to... Well, I think that's the problem. It's being laid on... Well, yeah, I'm going to lay it on because it's not being laid on.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Before I jump into this conversation, I do want to say I was a little... wasn't sure if I should... if I could talk about this because, you know, I'm going to be talking to you... I'm just going to be very transparent here. This conversation is about an article that I read in GQ. And actually, I've been wanting to talk about this for months, actually. And I just wasn't sure when to do it or if I could do it, if I was in a place that I could. And I feel like I'm an ally and I want to talk about these things because I feel like the people who are the victims and survivors of this should not be the only ones saying this needs to stop.
Oh, that's good. So basically, we're going to do an exercise of, because I tend to shy away from LGBTQ issues, talking about them, because I don't want to, I feel as if it's uncomfortable for me to step into that place, because I don't want to misrepresent it. But I think that you have a good point by saying that we do, as allies, need to talk about these things, and maybe we can demonstrate how to do it.
Absolutely. And so for anybody who, I might say the wrong thing, but, and let me know, like, tweet, email, get involved in our conversation, because we really are a community. Minority Corner is a community. We want you to feel a part of this space. So if I have overset my bounds, if I'm saying something incorrectly, if I'm saying something not correct, please let me know, because that's not my intention at all. But I do want to bring light and awareness to this issue, because the more that we talk about this, then the more that we can start to solve this and get it out there so it's not being done in the shadows.
Right, and we've had listeners tell us before that there have been things that hasn't necessarily sat right with them. Shout out to Ryan Christo, who is texting me, by the way, who has definitely commented about things that we didn't necessarily address in the way that he would have liked for, say, Latino issues.
Ah, right. And my boyfriend tells me things all the time that's like, you didn't, you know, mention this or think about things in this perspective. So
yeah, it's all process.
It is. So please let us know. So the specific thing I want to talk about is specifically, I want to talk about rape in the military. And specifically, I feel like when I talk, and I think that by shining light on it in the military, it can show an effect of how it is in our entirety of our society and our culture. And
I think that's a good point. Yeah. Oh, James, can I just throw in trigger warning?
Yeah.
I might be kind of late, but trigger warning just in case.
I thought about that. Yeah. But yes, thank you for reminding me.
Yeah, just, you know, for our listeners.
So between men and women, who would you say probably in the U.S. military is affected more by sexual assault?
I would just have to say women.
You would be wrong.
Okay.
More than half of the victims of sexual assault in the U.S. military are men.
Wow. By other men or by women?
No, by other men.
Oh, wow.
So if we kind of remember that, you know, when rape does occur, it's not necessarily about sex. It's about power.
Yeah, it's not arousal. Right? It's about domination.
So some of this is just, I'm just going to kind of read stories and then we can sort of talk about this. So there's this one guy, Steve Sovey. They have this thing called a tiger cruise. It's when they bring all like it's a Navy tradition where they bring their families on board to cruise with them for a few weeks. So about 2 weeks prior to this, three men ambushed Steve Sovey. Mm-hmm. They put a black hood around him and they strangled him. They sodomized him. And they pretty much left him for dead. And
oh my God.
He says that he might have killed himself if he hadn't been for his father coming in the next, you know, few weeks. But at the same time, like he couldn't tell his dad, right?
Oh my God.
So apparently, statistically, a moment a man enlists in the armed forces, his chances of being sexually assaulted increase by a factor of 10.
By 10?
By 10, yeah.
Oh my God. I had no idea it was that prevalent.
Yeah, well, statistically, there's about 38 male-on-male rapes in the military per day.
What?
And that works out to about 14,000 per year. And those numbers are so much higher than the female rapes in the military because there's just so many more men in the military.
God, and is this across branches or is it specific to certain branches? Do you know?
I think it's all over. The article didn't specify, and actually, well, the people that they interviewed from it, people who are victims and survivors of these sexual assaults, they come from all different branches of the military.
Wow.
Yes. So more men than women, about 14,000 in 2012 alone. Mm-hmm. And that's just, and prior to Don't Ask, Don't Tell, male and male rape victims would actually be discharged from engaging in homosexual conduct.
Wow.
So if this did happen to you and then you spoke up about it, you were then discharged. You were kicked out, right?
God.
So it sort of speaks into that. There's sort
victim
of this,
blaming to the highest degree.
Absolutely, right? And, you know, within the military, there's this weird balance of aggression and obedience, right? They really try to, you know, really instill what it means, this sort of hyper-masculinity type culture, and that you need to follow orders. So it creates
I was just going to say hyper-masculine.
Yeah, and it creates this, you know, imbalance of power that happens that, you know, can't be questioned. That there were some guys who were saying, they were like, you know, when your superior officer tells you to take your clothes off, that's what you do. And again, reminding you, like, this is happening, men saying this to men. This is men happening to other men.
Rank two, so higher up men abusing lower rank men?
So there's here's an example of that to answer that, actually. It's happening all across the board. So there's this guy, Trent Smith, who he said about his experience, he said he was a senior aide. He had a direct line to the top. Being invited over to his house, I just took it as I should go.
Right.
Looking back, I asked myself, why didn't you do anything? It wasn't like he held me down or tied me up. I didn't want to cross him. I really didn't feel like I had any choice.
Right.
I had just turned 19. This could be my career. I froze and went along with it.
Oh, this is horrible.
So this was like his superior officer.
This is horrible.
And these are like our young children who are going off to fight for our country and signing up for something else completely different that is traumatizing for them.
I just really want to point out too that the language is very similar to how we were talking about the Free Kesha issues last week.
Right.
And so across the board, men or women, if you're, it's the same sort of power control.
Yep.
And it's, I can't wrap my brain around it. It's horrible. Right.
Well, and that's, again, like, your story last week really inspired me, and I said I need to talk about this, because when I read this article, it fucking blew my mind of what's happening behind these closed doors in the military.
Right.
And I'll talk about this later, but, you know, it's a whole entire different – there. It's a whole different legal system over there. Similarly to, like, you know, like, when cops kill other – when they kill unarmed black men, or when cops kill people, it's a completely different, you know, with the grand juries, which we talked about a few episodes ago. Like, it's a whole entire displaced system that we can't be involved in what happens to these people when harm is done? Who's protecting these people?
Right, because normally the higher-ups are the ones who are getting protected.
Right. And there was this one guy who said, he's like, you know, if, you know, I go to my superior officer, does my superior and tell him that what happened in his unit, does my superior officer want to make that call to his higher-up? Because it makes him seem like he can't control his unit, right?
Right. Oh, my God. It's just, it's a spiral.
Yeah. So there was another instance, Cole Welsh, he was in the Army. Mm-hmm. He was in there from 2002 to 2007. He said that he had actually let the assault go because I didn't want it to interfere with my career. I wanted to be an officer, and I just said, bad experience, won't let that happen again.
Mm.
But there was some residual damage. A month and a half later, I was brought into a room and about nine officers, and I was told, you've tested positive for HIV. He said that he was then removed from the military and signed out within a day.
What?
It was a complete shock to him.
Oh, my God.
So from this instance that happened to him, he contracted HIV, and then they kicked him out for that reason.
Oh, my God.
And there's been known sort of, and then what happens, too, is sometimes these people are diagnosed with psychotic disorders if they do come forward with it.
Who, the victims or the aggressors?
The victims. Oh, wow. Nothing's happening to these aggressors.
Oh, my God.
And so when victims are actually coming through, they're being diagnosed with these psychotic, that they have like some, that they're schizophrenic or that they've got psychotic orders. One guy said that his, when he came forward, the psychiatrist was like, oh, so he... You wanted it.
Ew, no, what?
Or there's been doctors who say, son, men don't get raped.
Oh, my God. That's the biggest misconception that I think that we need to nip in the butt right away.
Right.
And that goes along with the whole image of masculinity in the public. Like, men can be victims.
Right.
And I think a lot of men don't come out because of that, about their abuse.
That's exactly it. Because of that. This shame, and then what ends up happening is that, you know, especially for straight guys, they then begin to start questioning their own sexual orientation. If it happens to gay men, it makes it that much harder for them to find intimacy in their relationships.
To be trusting.
Right. This tends to just, you can imagine the effect that it happens on their families, their friendships, because they're keeping this thing inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they tell, it just the repercussions of what happens. And then sometimes why they don't come forward is, you know, the fear of physical retaliation, professional ruin, social stigma. And I think I talked about this a little bit, but yeah, like the military will conspire in some cases to diagnose these people with personality discharges. And now when that happens, these people are then discharged from the military, but that's like on their record. So how hard do you think it would be to find a job? Like when you go out for a job and they're going to ask you questions, or when they do a background check, this is listed that you
have this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
And they list it as a preconceived diagnosis. So it means that you don't really get any of your VA veteran benefits or anything. So you're fucked.
Really? Oh my God. Oh, I had no idea it was so much victim blaming going on in the military regarding this.
Yeah. You know, and the people that, who the amount of suicide that does end up happening because of this, obviously, people who want to take their lives, the physical harm that they start to do to themselves, drugs, alcohol abuse. There's one guy who just completely spiraled and started to displace. He, trying to gain control of his life, he ended up sort of becoming this scammer. He ended up going to prison because he financially scammed people out of their money, but it gave him some sort of a sense of control, being able to do that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, on top of this, this whole entire thing is actually also it's very understudied because there's not so many people coming forward. There are, but it's not.
Right.
There's even more who are not.
Right. I mean, if you can only imagine what happens when you do come forward.
Yeah.
And it's the same, it's mirroring exactly what we talked about last week. Mm-hmm. I think as a country, we need to look at how we treat our victims of rape, men or women, because we treat them horribly.
And that's why I wanted to talk about this, is because we don't, like, I'm so uncomfortable about talking about this because we don't we don't talk about it. And that's why I'm like, shit, we fucking need to talk about this. Because it's this invisible silence thing that's happening.
Right. Even the word is uncomfortable.
And I don't think it should ever not be uncomfortable, but being okay with that. This is uncomfortable, but we need to address it and talk about it.
Right. We need to address that the fact that this is happening.
Yes.
And that we need to teach our children that this is not okay. It's not okay to do. Don't rape people.
And it's not just our children. We need to teach men. Because the statistics are not, the amount of women that are raping other people, it's so fucking small. It's so fucking small. So we need to teach men to not rape. And so that's why I want to see more men talking about this. Because we're seeing the women, we're seeing the victims of this. They're talking about it, or they're not talking about it because they want to move on.
Right.
Like, why are we having people who've survived trauma be the ones on the front lines to talk about this?
Right.
These are your mothers, your sisters, your brothers, your neighbors. So we, those of us who can and have the strength and the courage, we need to be the ones that are saying this is not okay. We need to start teaching men what it means to be a man in this country.
Right. And I think that kind of goes along with the whole power, hyper power that this country really values, I feel like. I mean, just look at the presidential election right now. It is hyper power and dominant. And I think that then leads itself into the culture of rape.
Totally. I mean, even that mess, like, I just saw the last GOP debate. Like, it looked like just a bunch of high school boys arguing and trying to swing their dicks around.
Right.
Between, like, Trump and Cruz. It was just like, but that's what people are, like, rooting for that. And, like, even, like, the women who are like, yeah, Trump. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Are you serious?
Yeah.
This is what you want to lead our country.
I know.
I had mentioned earlier, just there's one story, this guy named Jones who was gay, and this happened to him. He's targeted because he was gay. He was targeted. He says, I'm terrified of men. I'm gay and I'm terrified of men. Ugh. I can't even get an erection, especially since I got sober. I isolate. I don't go to movies. I can't handle concerts. I have horrid nightmares. Last Christmas, I went to dinner with some friends, and at one point, I started panicking so bad that I had to get out of the restaurant.
Oh, my God.
I was shaking. I never even told anybody about this until July. Do you know what it is to live like this for over 30 years?
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine. And, you know, that's where I hopefully can use my allyship to say, like, this isn't just his problem. This is our problem. This is all of our problems.
Yeah. And, you know, some people, they even avoid, you know, going in for treatment because, you know, you and I we're like, oh my God, this is hard to talk about. Imagine for those who've gone through it.
Right.
So that much even harder to talk about it, especially even being a man who's been a victim of this or survivor of this, trying to find resources to even talk about it. And if you even get the courage to then do it, the VA facilities focus largely on women.
Oh, really?
So they're not even equipped to be talking about this because our military has it in the mind that this is not something that happens.
Wow.
Again, men don't rape men.
Man.
So they're not even thinking about
God.
This. And that, like, their questionnaires don't even, like, one guy said that his questionnaire was asking, how many times were you violated in your vagina?
Ugh.
He doesn't have a vagina.
Right.
So the questionnaire's not even thinking that this is even a possibility.
They didn't even make it neutral.
No, yeah.
Gender neutral.
And that the VA is just so ill-equipped to even handle this that I think there's a 60,000 new patients have been made to wait for 90 days or more since 2004. So once they, you know, have this complaint, they go forward and they're trying to get resources, trying to get help. And over like 65,000 don't even make it, like many don't even get to see a doctor. And actually, Eric Shkinsky, who was the head of Veteran Affairs, he resigned from the pressure. Because he's getting so many people coming in over the years about sexual assault.
That he resigned?
Because they're just not equipped to even handle it.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
We need to really take a good hard look at our country and how we're treating our veterans.
Well, there was Senator Christine Gillen-Bernard of New York.
Okay.
She tried to, I think last year in March, she was trying to get a bill passed called the Military Justice Improvement Act. Mm-hmm. This would strip commanders of the power to determine whether to prosecute sex assaults. Mm. So it was going to change. It was going to change the structures of it and delegate the powers to independent military persecutors. So it was going to move it outside of the military, because right now it's the military looking into the military in the same way that the police, when it's, you know, a policeman kills somebody else, it's the police looking into it. It's on the outside source. Actually, House of the Cards did an episode about this.
Like, and I mean, I'm not like trying to belittle it, but I'm just trying to put it into a context I can understand, since I don't come from a military background. But there's that TV show JAG.
Yes, it's like JAG. And it's essentially JAG.
Yeah, okay.
It's essentially JAG. Okay. And that's, I mean, the fact that there's a TV show about the fucked up things that happen in the military, and that there's like, you know, or
says something.
NCIS, like, fucking fucked up.
Right.
So the bill did not pass. It passed in the Senate, but then it got filibustered. And then Senator Claire McCaskill of Missouri, she had a competing bill, which pretty much doesn't change anything, but makes it seem like it does. And so everybody was like, oh, yeah, I like this bill. And something else I just wanted to briefly touch upon, just talking about like the history of like rape and male on male rape that happens in this country. It was, did we talk about this before? It was even used in slavery. Like,
oh yeah. I don't know if we've talked about it, but it happened all the time for control.
Yeah. And like sex farms where they were like, literally there were sex farms where certain guys had to have, they would force them to, they were breeding them like animals essentially. And
I know
I read in one instance what they would have the slave owners would have these parties and they would gather their slaves, their male slaves. They would rape them and have these crazy rape parties or whatever, and then they would make their children watch, like their young boys watch. So you're seeing your father in this instance.
I can't even begin to wrap my brain around the atrocities that happened during slavery.
Yeah,
like that stuff to me, and I mean, as a black person, of course, right, is insane. But I just want to like bring up that if you live here in this country and you may not have a drop of African-American blood in you, you still, that stuff still runs through your blood, because that is the infrastructure that our country is built upon.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you bringing this up is a good point, that this thing that people say doesn't exist, male victims of rape, has been going on since slavery and before, probably.
Yeah, centuries.
And that was built into the fabric of our country. So it's obviously something that we need to address and talk about.
And that's kind of, that was kind of why I wanted to bring it all the way back to slavery, of, you know, when our country was founded upon, that this, you know, male rape in general, but specifically like the silent male-on-male rape, has been happening in our country forever, since its beginnings. And it also made me realize, maybe perhaps that's also why homosexuality within the black community is almost something that's so feared, because young men watch their fathers be raped.
Oh, fascinating.
So I wonder if that has like this other sort of thing that's been sort of carried down the line.
Fascinating. So, I don't know. Oh God, man.
Yeah, so I just wanted to I wanted to bring this up because I'm a huge proponent of teaching of men getting together and really teaching what it means to be a man in this country, and really just, men, stop raping. Like, that's literally my sentence. Stop fucking raping. That is it.
Right.
Done.
Right.
Stop it. Just stop. Fucking stop. Don't do it.
Well, I think it's important to talk about it because the culture of the military is something that I think that we should be able to critique, because we're recruiting all of these young teenage boys, basically 18, 19, you're still a teenager, you're very vulnerable, and then you're supposed to automatically be a man instantly. You're under this highly uber masculine thumb, and it just puts these young boys into such like a precarious, scary place to be, that I think that we need to address more in this country, because I just don't think that men/boys grow up as fast as the country believes them to grow up to be.
Very true.
You know?
And especially because they're volunteering, and we're not protecting them.
Right.
And just in general, we really, I feel like invisible cultures are like prisons in the military, and we don't see it, and we're just like, all right, you're out of sight, out of mind, and, you know, they're dying, they're risking their lives for us, and they're having, I mean, the PTSD that they experience from this is, I think, it's harder to deal with this sort of post-traumatic stress disorder than the kind that they receive when they go off to war.
Right.
So that's how traumatizing these events and experiences are, because this is happening to people from people that they know, people that they trusted, people in their unit, their superior officers, these people that were like their family. So the PTSD that they receive, it's even greater.
Can you even imagine going through this and then going to war on top of it?
How the fuck do you
right?
do that? And my heart goes out, obviously, to survivors out there who have had these experiences. And I hope, I don't know, I wonder, it makes you one of those things, I want to do something. And I
think you are doing something. The fact that we're talking about it, the fact that we're willing to get into the uncomfortable pool to discuss these issues may, I don't know, it helps disrupt that tradition that has been going
on. To break the silence. And I hope we can all...
By talking...
Let's all continue to... Let's talk about it. Those of you who have not experienced this, you've got to step up. We have to step up. We have to be the ones to talk about it and shut it down.
It's okay to feel uncomfortable. I think that's...
That's our podcast. I feel uncomfortable listening... Everybody feels uncomfortable listening to our podcast. Yeah. Our podcast would just be called Uncomfortable Corner.
Oh, no.
Thanks.
Well, thank you for bringing it up, and thank you for addressing it. You know, I think it's good to talk about these things. It really is.
Let's shut it down, y'all. Let's shut that shit down. Hell no.
Right, we are in
my corner. What's your corner?
In my corner.
What is it? Where am I? Tell me things. Aneke, I'm scared. I'm frightened. So I'm grabbing my crotch.
Don't be scared.
Can I grab my crotch?
My crotch? No, there's kids in this corner.
Oh, whoa. I take it back. Ew. Oh, my God. I take it back. My hands are not anywhere near my crotch or anyone else's. Barney and Power Rangers, Looney Tunes. Candy. Okay.
Okay, so this is something that I love this topic because it touches on all the different points that we try to bring up.
Ooh.
One, we're always talking about allies and what you can do as an ally.
This is true.
And this question was actually posed on Facebook by my awesome, awesome, awesome friend, Sarah. I'm not going to say her last name because I didn't ask her permission to say this, but you know who you are, boo.
Her Facebook is about to blow up, so you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
With all you're of famous our now.
All of them are going to be like, hey, girl, that was a great idea. Can I get your number? And that's called harassment. So stop it.
Don't do that to Sarah. Okay, so Sarah is, she's white, and she just moved from Oakland to Oregon. And she has two kids, and she's always talking and wondering and writing on Facebook about how she can be an ally, how she can help, how she can keep the conversation going. And, you know, sincerely asking for, you know, some guidance, even though she's a well-informed, awesome woman. And I think she's raising her kids beautifully. The fact that she's even asking them for allyship is step number one. Amazing. So the other day, she was talking about how her and her eldest child were talking about the Oscars. And he wanted to know why the Oscars were racist. And he's four or five. Super cute kid. And she was like, I need some books on how to teach my kid about racism that doesn't make it cute, that tells the facts, but also makes it, like, intelligent, you know? Because
what does a cute book on racism look like? The elephants were pink.
I'm about to break it down because...
Whoa! Okay, I'm so excited.
Full
disclosure. You were literally Blue's Cluesing the shit out of our episode.
Full disclosure.
This is literal Blue's Clues.
I did not find this list. This was another one of her friends, which I just posted some cutesy video that I found, but her friend posted this list called Books That Help Kids Talk About Racism. strict to the point, that lists some books. And so I thought it would be a good idea to read some of these books out to y'all, to give you some titles, let you know what they're about. So just in case, if you have some little ones or you have some nephews, if you're a POC and you want to talk to your children, or if you are not and you want to be an ally and start your children off early, this is the way to do it.
This reminds me of, did you see the episode of Black-ish this week?
I haven't. I'm working towards it.
So, again, everybody, please watch Black-ish. Black-ish just did an episode about police brutality this week.
Wow.
And it was amazing because it talks about it on, it's first of all, it's this black family seeing these things unfold, and you have different generations of the black family. You've got the grandparents, you have the parents who grew up very differently. One grew up biracially, the other one grew up in like a poor black community. And then they've got kids who are teenagers and then kids, and how do they tell their kids, are like, what's going on? What, you know, there's this trial that happened, and the many different conversations that happen with in a black family. And it just gives you a window into those conversations that happen. And the show is still funny and still had its moments, but you laugh and you cry throughout the entire episode, and it's amazing.
And I heard that it doesn't resolve, and it's messy, because that's just what it is. It's messy and things don't get resolved. Yeah. But the fact that you're talking about it with your kids is the best way to do it.
And black shows have been doing this forever. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air used to do this. The Jeffersons used to do this. Like, black shows are just like are half-hour comedies, and it shows like it's messy and unresolved and just gets into it. So if you're watching if you're not watching Black-ish, you need to start. And if you're watching Modern Family and not Black-ish, you need to look at that.
Yeah. Watch Black-ish and Fresh Off the Boat, and then maybe when you're feeling like it, dip into some Modern Family. But those two shows.
But if you're watching Modern Family, if you're watching Modern Family, I watch Modern Family.
So
watch
do
all
I.
the family shows.
Yeah.
Like, do it all. Watch all of them. Because I challenge you, if you're watching the predominantly white family and not the other ones, I ask you, get curious about it. Get curious. I don't know.
Right. I mean, I had to check myself because I was watching Black-ish and I wasn't watching Fresh Off the Boat. And I was kind of like, why am I not watching the show? And I was like, oh, because maybe I didn't think I'd relate to it. But I hella relate to it. And I love
it. It's about the 90s. That show is like, you can relate to so many. And you start to realize that we're all, families are families, you know, and there's certain underlying things. And then you also learn about other different cultures and families and stuff.
Right.
I'm sorry. I digress.
No, it's good.
Back to the kid books.
So basically, I just wanted to bring up some book titles. Go to your local library or buy the books. Help support.
You're just doing a promotion for libraries. I see what this is. You tricked us.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's a good promotion. It's not like I'm promoting drugs.
I went to the library today.
Oh, you did? Look at you.
I went to the Brooklyn Library to go pick up my zip card.
Oh.
I asked the black lady librarian, who was very cute and young like you.
Oh.
And she was very smart. She was really cool. I'd want to hang out with her.
Uh-oh. There could only be one. Am I going to have to Highlander her? Do I need to go down there with a samurai sword?
You might have to. She kind of was like the Brooklyn version of you. She was really chill, really cool. Mm. You could tell she wants to be working at a different library that's a little bit higher. She wants to move her way up.
Mm.
And I was like, where's the zip car? She's like, it's right around the corner. And she's like,
is that what you did? You just walked in. You're like, where's the zip car? You put the door.
She's like, isn't the gate open? I was like, oh, yeah, it is. I wasn't sure.
Bye. You didn't get a book?
No. And okay, I do audiobooks.
Oh, I like how you clean that up real quick.
I like to listen.
Anywho.
Okay.
The first book is very obviously called Let's Talk About Race.
Yes. Let's talk about race, baby. Let's talk about all the racism.
So it is written by Julius Lester, and it's illustrated by Kate Berber. This book focuses on helping kids tell their own story and including their race as an integral but only one part of their personal history. Lester begins by describing his own story and including, oh, and I'm black. His narrative then asks kids to think about how people are the same as well as how they are different. This is great and useful book for kids to talk directly about how being a certain race influences their personal story.
Yeah.
So basic stuff. Some of this stuff is just so basic, but that's basically, like, that's where kids need to be, need to enter into it, you know? Okay, so the next book is called The Other Side. It's written by Jacqueline Woods and illustrated by E.B. Lewis. The more I read this book, the more I love it. A fence, both metaphorically and physically, defines the boundaries between Anne's white family and Clover's African-American one. Clover's mom has told her not to cross the fence because it is unsafe. Instead, Clover sits on the fence, watching the other girls play. Ooh, metaphor.
Ooh.
Annie eventually approaches Clover, and the two sides begin talking.
Spoiler alert!
A friendship is formed, and the fence is finally crossed.
You just spoiled the whole story. I don't need to read it at all.
Whatever.
Damn.
What do you think would happen?
I wasn't sure. I don't know if they go to the bazaar together, or maybe they, like,
they just sit at the other side of the fence and stare at each other?
They just look at each other. Or they have, like, a dance-off. I don't know.
Side note, this is just from my own personal research. American Girls, I think in prior episodes I've always kind of shit on American Girls because of one black doll.
You did. We both did. About Abby.
One black doll is a slave.
She was. She makes hush puppies. We talked about this.
So they're gonna introduce a new black doll.
Oh.
I forget what her name is.
Tanya.
But she's in the 60s.
Ooh. And she a Black Panther?
No, but she is part of the civil rights movement, and she is in Detroit, and she's like a disc jockey.
That's kind of amazing. The American Girls are stepping it up. That's beyond cute. That's
finally
fucking amazing. Because that means that the black one's the best one, because the other one's still just like, Alice, she lives in 1776. She sews old dresses. She died of tuberculosis.
They're not that bad. Okay, here's another one. Lillian's Right to Vote, a Celebration of Voting Rights Acts of 1965. So this is written by Jonah Winter and Shane Evans. Mm-hmm. So this one is about Lillian, who's an old black lady, and she wants to vote. That was my own interpretation of it, which I think is good.
Question. I have a question about this. Before blacks gained the right to vote, were like Latinos and Asians allowed to vote?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah, was it just white people were able to vote?
I don't know. Listeners, if you know, tweet us at Minority Corner with a K, right on our Facebook walls, Minority Corner with a K, search us on Facebook, because I would like to know. In fact, I'm probably going to look it up afterwards, because I know there was a lot of, I do know that Asian Americans were discriminated for jobs.
Right, yes.
But I don't know about voting. That's interesting.
Right.
Huh. Okay. Well, something to think about.
Yeah.
Another book is called Separate is Never Equal.
Nope.
By Duncan Tonatin. And this is interesting because it tells the story of school desegregation 10 years before Brown versus Board of Education. In 1944, Sylvia's family moved to a new community. When she tried to attend school, she was told that she would have to go to the Mexican school. Sylvia and her family fight back and eventually win a very important court battle, setting the stage for future desegregation cases. I like this book a lot because a lot of times when people talk about desegregation of schools, they think it's purely a white and black issue.
Right.
And just like what you brought up with voting, we got so many different races playing into American history here, and we need to know these different sides of the story too.
And that's the thing too, is like I'm so more interested in those stories too, because I think Latino and Asian, like people, POCs, I think the more that they hear about their struggles in America too, they realize that we're all in this fucking boat for equality to actually together, that like the only person that has all the shit is, you know, the rich, straight, white man. You know, like, they get all the things, you know? And so the more that we see the journeys of that, because there's even the case, I forget the guy's name, but recently there was the Asian American cop who, he had shot and killed an unarmed black guy.
Oh, yes.
And he, his prison sentence, he got a prison sentence. Like, usually the white cops all get off. Like, they don't get indicted or anything. But this guy is going to trial. And so the Asian community is, you know, protesting. And it's not so much that they're not asking to be treated like, they said, they're not asked to be treated like white people, but we're saying, hey, look, the white cops get off.
Right.
In some ways, I think the Asian community is now joining force of, they're seeing there are different treatments for if you are non-white.
Right. There's nuance. There's so much nuance with everybody here in the country, and we're all treated at different levels of privilege and without privilege. And I think it's good to inspect that. We need to really dissect
how... It's not even good. It's like, you have to. It's part of, like, necessary. We have to be... We have to be this system of checks and balances and ask for better when this old-ass system is not going to do it on its own.
Right. So here's another book called Across the Alley, and I'm sensing a theme because this is just like the other book, but now we have
Let me guess. Somebody, Joseph, sees somebody else who looks different than him across the alley, and he goes over there, and they play. Is that what happened?
Willie and Abe.
Oh, it was close.
Abe is Jewish and Willie is African American, and they live across the alley from each other. But their parents and the two boys worry that their parents and grandparents won't accept their friendship because, you know, who they are. So basically kind of talking about their lives and how they become friends.
Doesn't that not... So when you hear a story about that, like, well, maybe it's like a... Because this isn't based on a true story, but this is how it should be. Mm-hmm. So this is why when I question, like, Woody Allen, why the fuck are there no black people in your goddamn movies? Like...
Because New York is diverse.
Woody Allen, you need to walk across that goddamn alley is what you need to do.
Need to meet Willie.
Can we do this? Can we see what his family's like. And I got an idea. Minority Corner book campaign protest.
Thing. Ooh.
All of our listeners, let's buy copies of this book and send it to Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Because he needs to learn. I literally think we should do that.
Oh, Woody Allen. Ugh. I don't want to open that can of so many wrongs that he has.
No. I'm starting fights with, Linda Tripp, Woody Allen, Stacey Dash, add it to the list. I'm over it.
Let me read like two more just so people can. And we're going to post this link to our website, which is minoritycornerwithak.libsyn.com. LIBY.
Yes.
LIBSYN.com.
Good job.
Thank you.
See, this is like Blue's Clues.
I did it. I can spell. Okay, so this one's called One Green Apple. During a class trip to an apple orchard, Farah, a Muslim girl who has not yet learned English, is nervous about her new classmates. In her first-person narrative, she reveals that she knows there are tension between her former home and her new country, and she is uncertain if her classmates will welcome her. Eventually, however, one other student befriends her, and the connection is made. And then you can read on.
That is a great one. I'm glad, especially because I think that's another huge group that we need to talk about and give some protection to.
Yeah.
Because as my boyfriend talks about this a lot, Jerome, and when he comes on the show next week, because I'll be in Amsterdam, I want to talk about this because the hugest racism, and I noticed this too when I was in Europe, there's a huge, huge Muslim population in Europe, way more than here in the U.S. Like, almost to the point, like, we don't really understand as much as Europeans do because they're right near the Middle East, and so there's a huge influx of Muslim people there. But the hugest racism that's occurring in Europe is way more towards Muslim people than it is towards black people or people from Africa. It's specifically towards Muslim people. So... And you hear the way that, like, Trump's talking about, you know, Muslim people. There's so just much ignorance. And in America, we especially just don't understand. And so if you can get this book into kids' hands now, that's fantastic. Like,
the more that you know, the less
it's scary.
Exactly. That's the main point of these books, is just to kind of find the connection. Find the connection. And these kids are ready. These kids are just... They don't see the differences right away.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For example, another book called The Sandwich Swap by Kelly Puccino. Kelly D. Puccino. School lunchtime is the setting for the story about learning to appreciate differences. Lily eats PB&Js and Salma eats hummus. Lily decides Salma's lunch is gross and their friendship comes to a screeching halt. The entire student takes sides in the great food debate until the girls decide to try each other's lunches and the problem is solved. See, so easy. This book describes it in such a plain and simple way. All you gotta do is just check it out and see that it's no big thing. Hummus is delicious. Get off your high horse, Lily.
And hummus is the shit, so you need to fucking try this.
Lily needs to check herself because
she's about to fucking wreck herself. And you know what? I wish those kids, those fucking San Jose State kids, they need these books. Like, bring it right. back full circle, that these books are incredibly important.
Exactly. So, I didn't read all the books on the list. You can check them out. And also, remember when you're in your neighborhood library trying to check out one of these books from the list for your children, ask your friendly librarian, not where the zip cars are, but where other books like this are.
Ooh, and I just got my bill for the zip car. They overcharged me $100, and you know I'm pissed.
What?
Yeah, I literally just got the email as you were talking about the hummus.
I saw you not looking at me.
I was like, what is this bill? Ah! I am pissed.
Oh, by the way, speaking of overpaying for bills, this is totally like another issue. This is like Neke informing James of something cool issue and the listeners. Uh-huh. San Francisco. Oh, wait, you didn't have a car, so it didn't really matter. But anyways, San Francisco is refunding tickets that have been overpaid. I'm getting $129 back.
Wow, but... you should give me that money to pay off this Zipcar bill that came back.
No.
$100 more than it was supposed to be. I am upset.
Someone, contest that.
Someone is about to hear from me. That's not okay.
But check out your library, buy these books, educate your kids, start the conversation early. The world will thank you.
I already do thank you.
Aww.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Are we
thank
still recording?
Thank you, India. Thank you, pomegranate.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank nakedness. Thank you.
Oh.
Remember when Alanis Morissette was like happy and we were like, fuck that Alanis Morissette. Go back to yelling at Uncle Joey.
I know. Nobody likes meditation. Nobody likes meditation, Alanis Morissette.
Get out of India. Get angry.
Quizlet Corner.
Blast from the past.
Remix.
Where are they now? Now.
Okay, blast.
Where are they now? All right, okay. If you couldn't guess. this week's Quizlet Corner is a blast from the past. We're going to revisit some issues that we talked about in the past and see how they're doing. Mm-hmm. So... as usual, one of these is not true.
That's not as usual. You like to give me...
there was maybe one or two other times. Well, today, yes.
Okay, one is not true.
So this is all based... they're all based on past episodes.
One better be about that one lady that gave birth in the woods.
Damn it, it's not. What was her name? Oh, God, she was the best. Samantha Mumba or something? No.
That was a pop star from the 90s.
Who was like, I think she was like, she was from Dublin and she was black. And that's the first time I realized
she was like an Irish black lady.
Irish people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She was also in The Time Traveler's Wife.
Okay, we're okay. It's Lit Corner. Okay.
Okay. All right. Okay. One of these is not true. Criminal charges were dropped against the 6 Rent Boy employees. Remember back when I talked about Rent Boy?
Yes.
And Rent Boy, they all were going to prison because of it?
Yes.
One of these is maybe true. It could be true. Criminal charges were dropped against 6 Rent Boy employees.
Okay.
Could be true. Could not be true.
Mm-hmm.
The Kids for Cash judge was sentenced to 28 years in prison for his $1 million in receiving in bribes, selling... the kids' jail sales, which you talked about.
Yes, I remember that.
I don't know if that was in an aired episode. That might have been in the unaired episode.
Really?
So people are like, I don't remember that. I have to check.
Okay.
Well, we did talk about this. You and I talked about it. The listeners don't know anything about it. Charlie Sheen has been convicted similarly to the same way that Tyler Mandingo, Michael Johnson, who was convicted... way back when, back in the summer, for 30 years for recklessly infecting people with HIV. So, Charlie Sheen has been convicted in a similar way for knowingly convicting a bunch of ladies with HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that on episode 6. And then, dating back to referencing your last week's episode, celebrities have been coming out of the woodwork in full support of Kesha. One of these is not true.
It's a Charlie Sheen has not been convicted for infecting ladies with HIV.
Yeah, isn't that fucked up? Talking about racial and economic disparities. Yep. Yeah, you're right. Charlie Sheen has even come out and said this, and he has infected numerous women with HIV knowing this, and not a single fucking thing has happened. And this kid, this, you know, young black college student who didn't even know at the one time about his status, and 30 years in fucking prison. Poor kid. So if you're white, you're a dude and you're rich, you can pretty much do whatever the fuck you want.
Charlie Sheen has gotten away with so much. It's like disgusting how much he's gotten away with.
And I don't know what we do. I don't know what we like. I don't know what the answer to that is. So
I don't either.
If you have an answer, let us know.
Let us know. Yeah, one, sadly.
Yeah, I don't know if you, I don't know if there are any winners today, actually.
Wow.
Right, here we come.
What an episode.
I know. Before we close, I want to give a little thing that I want Minority Corner to sponsor. Again, something I didn't talk to you about, but I want to start doing.
Okay. Yeah.
I started, you know, a lot of people do Throwback Thursdays or Flashback Fridays. Since there is already a Throwback Thursday, Flashback Friday seems redundant. We just did that.
Yes.
So I want to start hashtag Be Fabulous Fridays, where you can tweet, you can Instagram, you can Facebook post, just you being fabulous or uplifting, especially if you are. This goes for everybody. Everybody who considers themselves part of the Minority Corner and the allies. So you're also in the corner. You can use this as an opportunity to uplift like an article or a TV show or an actor who's maybe outside of your gender, your sexuality, your race, especially if you're an ally looking to get involved in Be Fabulous Friday, or if it's just you. It's hard enough. Being a minority and throwing intersectionality into that, anything like that. Goddamn. Fucking hard. So let's come together once a week, and how fabulous can you be? And I want you to let that be your mantra all day long.
Ooh, I like that.
You're gonna see how fabulous you can be. So I want you to then take a photo or do a video, do something, post it on the interwebs or whatever it is that you're using, and let's start a movement that Fridays are Be Fabulous Friday. So hashtag that Be Fabulous Friday. You can even hashtag Minority Corner into that since we're kind of sponsoring
cross
this.
It, cross promotion.
But let's start a movement.
I like that. Hashtag Be Fabulous Friday.
Yes, please.
Oh, I love it. Okay, cool. I'm going to do it.
And don't forget, we also have an email address that you could also email questions or things that you would like us to talk
about.
We
have an email address?
We want to do, you and I use it, minoritycornerwithak@gmail.com.
I was trying to play a skit, but there we go.
It was like you just emailed me using it. You can use that to email us any questions you have. We want to start doing question corners. I'd love to do an episode where Aneke and I just answer your questions about what we did in the 3.5 months that we were on hiatus. So questions about Europe, questions about Aneke's wedding. Happened to me in Europe.
It's a good way if you want to stay anonymous too, for those of you that don't like the public spotlight. If you don't want to tweet us a question or write on our Facebook page, you can always send us an email at minoritycornerwithak@gmail.com.
Because this is your corner, and in any way that you feel that you identify as a minority, this is the corner for all of us.
Use it as a platform.
The more minorities, and even the more minorities that we're here, then we actually become the majority. And so then we could become Majority Corner.
Oh, my God.
We got to dream big, Aneke. Dream big.
I like it. It's good.
So get involved in the conversation, damn it.
Just like Lily Tomlin.
Just like Lily Tomlin did. Well, that's it for me.
That's it for me, too. It was good talking to you, James.
Very good talking to you. Have a great week, and I'll be reporting from Amsterdam.
Oh, my God. Safe flights. Everybody think good thoughts for James. He's about to cross that ocean.
Thank you. Yes. Well, if you're listening to this, I've already made it there. But anyways, but thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. How does time travel work? I don't know. I'm not the time traveler's wife.
All right. Hey, you guys are really ahead of time, so maybe by the time they're listening to it, you'll just be touching down.
That's true. Now I'm really fucking confused. Well, anyways,
I don't know.
hello from the other side of the ocean.
Ooh.
Bye, y'all.
All right. Bye, guys.